World leaders and powerful industry managers from the private sector are preparing to travel to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil to attend the upcoming Rio Plus 20 United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development. There will also be representatives from NGOs and other groups, all aiming to come together to shape how we can reduce poverty, advance social equity, and ensure environmental protection on a planet damaged by pollution and rocked by climate change. The United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development takes place from the 20th to the 22nd of June to mark the 20th anniversary of the 1992 UN Conference on Environment and Development in Rio, as well as the 10th anniversary of the 2002 World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. This conference will focus on two themes: a green economy in the context of sustainable development, poverty eradication, and the institutional framework for sustainable development. It will result in a focused political document. But the movers and the shakers of the world will not be the only ones in Rio working hard to put forward their opinions. Thousands of members of civil society and faith groups are participating in the Rio Plus 20 People Summit for Social and Environmental Justice, an event that runs alongside and overlaps the UN conference from the 13th to the 23rd of June. Amongst the participants at Rio Plus 20 is Joe Rozanski, OFM. He's the Franciscan father who heads the Franciscan Office of Justice and Peace and the Integrity of Creation at Franciscan headquarters here in Rome. He agreed to talk to me just before setting off to Rio, where he was immediately due to hold meetings with some 60 fellow Franciscans attending the event to exchange ideas, set down propositions, and strategize on getting their voice heard in the highest echelons of the organization. I had read one of a series of articles Father Joe published in the run-up to Rio Plus 20 and commented on his intro, in which he says, "In the opinion of many, we stand at a critical moment of Earth's history."
I think that Rio Plus 20, obviously, it's named after the Rio 92 was the original environmental summit that they held in Brazil. And 20 years later, the UN is coming together to evaluate what's been going on for the last 20 years and to talk about new approaches, maybe new structures to address the issues that we're facing. As in Rio 92, there's going to be a very strong presence of civil society, because in some way civil society has been included in the preparations for Rio Plus 20, but in other ways it has not been. And I think people are becoming increasingly frustrated with the kinds of approach that governments, the United Nations, especially transnational companies, are taking to these issues. So together with the UN conference, there is also the People Summit. And the UN itself has various mini-meetings. The last one, which is supposed to be for the heads of state or, you know, the heads of delegation, is going to be the 20th to the 22nd of June.
So that's when the movers and shakers of the world will gather, I commented.
Well, economic or environmental, I think it depends on how governments view what's going on at Rio Plus 20. To be quite honest with you, I haven't followed so closely the internal workings of the UN. We Franciscans have an NGO, a Franciscan family NGO at the UN called Franciscans International, and they have much more been accompanying the process leading up to the UN conference in Rio. We are going, we've got about 60 people in a delegation that are going to Rio Plus 20, people from around the world. We've tried to include the different parts of our Franciscan family and different geographical regional representations as well. Our big idea is that, of course, we want to accompany what's going to be going on in Rio, but our biggest concern is that out of these meetings, out of our Franciscan presence in Rio, we're going to be able to articulate some sort of strategic plan for how we want to deal with the issues that will be coming out of Rio. For us, when we talk about environment, we don't talk about environment by itself, but we talk about environmental justice. And the idea is that this would include both the questions of the environment, which are very near and dear to us, especially as Franciscans. But I would hope that just as people, you know, when we're talking about our home, we would like to keep it clean and functioning well. We've got a lot of problems in that area. You know, so we as Franciscans are very concerned about that. But at the same time, we will not be accused of being tree huggers. You know, and the tree hugger label, I'm sure, is meant to disparage the movement in itself. But our question is not just for the trees or not just for the environment, but also for the people who live within the environment.
It seems to me that 20 years on,
governments and leaders are turning more and more to faith groups for help in this respect.
It's hard to say. I really don't know. And I don't know what it means to say they turn to us for help. You know, if they're looking for some sort of fervorino, you know, to tell people that this is important, you know, I think we knew that before they did, or at least we've been more concerned about it since then. So I'm not exactly sure what it means. I think part of the question that I would like answered when I go to Rio is to understand exactly what they would like of us. But I think that it's not a one-way street. It's not that we're going to help them. I think they need to listen to our concerns, and we need to take all of these concerns into account when we talk about all of the problems that we're facing. As I was saying earlier, if we're going to be talking about environmental justice, when we talk about environment, we need to take into account the issue of poverty. We need to take into account the issue of unemployment, of climate change, of climate refugees. Usually, if you look around the world, the people who have least created the problems are the ones who are most suffering. And that goes for any place. It's in the developed world, it's in the developing world too. The developing world, obviously, is much worse off, you know, because the platform is lower. But even there, the whole question of, you know, when we talk about sustainability, that's a big word for, you know, it's been a big word in our circles for a while. It's been a big word in the world, but the way that we define it is very important.
How do you define sustainability?
I think that sustainability can't be defined in simply economic terms or in development terms. People talk about sustainable development, and then, you know, in a sense, the issue is already decided about whether or not you want development, without even talking about what sort of development we're talking about. And I think in that sense, you know, as I look at sustainability, some of the things that we need to look at are lifestyle issues. You know, are the question of less consumption in our world. It is literally impossible for everybody to live like those in the developed world. There are not enough resources in the world. And the idea is not to tell people in the developing world that, well, eat less or, you know, do less or whatever. I think right now we need to come face to face with the reality that if we do not change in the developed world, I don't think we're going to really address the issues that we're talking about here, whether it be of sustainability or, you know, environmental justice. You know, so sustainability, I think we need to look at, you know, sustaining the lives of people, and we need to look at sustaining the life of our world around us. You know, because if we don't take care of nature, if we don't take care of the environment, it will not take care of us. I mean, the more and more, you know, we look around and see all of these greater extremes of weather, you know, weather patterns, et cetera, stronger storms, more rain, more drought, et cetera, that's really what the climate change science says is going to happen. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the winter's colder this year. Well, it's a greater extreme, and this is an effect of climate change. So it's hard to define sustainability just on the spur of the moment. But it seems to me that's another part of what we need to do. We need to call one another to a dialogue. If we don't sit down and talk to one another honestly about all these things, I don't think we're going to get anything done. It seems to me that much of the economic world is absolutely much more concerned about the bottom line and about profit. And they are not very concerned about the issues of sustainability and the poor, those who are losing out in this whole process. So I think together we need to raise these questions and need to look for answers.
Are you confident your voice will be heard?
No, I'm not. I'm not sure what's going to happen here. There's a whole debate going around green economy right now, because green economy is a big catchphrase for what's going to be going on in Rio. And there are surely two very diverse approaches to green economy. You know, there are those who are saying that green economy is going to be what saves us. And there are others that are saying that what green economy is doing, it's commodifying all of nature. It's turning everything, the processes of nature, all of the resources that nature offers, it's turning all of these things into commodities, and it's going to give them a price. You know, for us, you know, if you look at the Franciscan, at St. Francis and the Canticle of the Creatures, for example, Francis approaches nature in terms of relationship. It's not just the sun or the moon, it's brother sun, it's sister moon, it's brother wind, and right down, you know, right down the whole list of everything that exists, Francis is concerned to be in relationship with people and with the world around him. And then he sees that, you know, based on these relationships, then you begin to talk about, well, how do you organize yourself? What should we do? Francis lived at a time of great change, as we are now, in terms of economics, in terms of political systems. I think that, like Francis, we need to raise the questions that, for us, are the bottom line. Whether or not people are going to hear us, well, I'm not sure about the process that we need to employ for people to be able to hear us. Again, going back to what I said at the beginning, this is why it's so important for us to have some sort of strategic plan right now. I mean, if we have a whole world of pastoral institutions that we work in, schools, hospitals, parishes, you know, what do we do in those places? First of all, to raise the consciousness of our own people, and then to have them work to raise the consciousness of the other people around them.
You know? Well, one thing we can say since 1992 is awareness generally has risen incredibly in the general population, wouldn't you say?
I do think that more people know about the problems right now, but there are also still many people who are confused or who have an idea that's pretty different from, you know, what I would feel. And I think it has a lot to do with conflicting publicity or conflicting ideas that are present in the world today. I do think that, you know, the whole idea of green economy, you know, we talk about the whole idea of whitewashing something in English. There are many who are saying they're trying to greenwash right now all the problems that we face. And, you know, when you look around and see the publicity that is, you know, that people are just bombarded with every day, whether it be about products or whether it be about systems, you know, the way that we do things, it's difficult to really stop and to think about what's at stake. People's lives, it seems to me, are just very hectic today. And, you know, we talk about having more communication than ever. But I'm concerned that I think we have less now. You know, I look at the end of the day how many emails I send. You know, how much do I really think about what I'm sending out? And it just seems to me that that's what people's lives are like. They're on a treadmill. Things go quickly. They don't have time to think about things. And that has that's about everything. About your families, about your work, about the approach to life. People don't have the possibility or have very little possibility to address those things in very good ways or in ways that in productive ways. Maybe it's better than I think people all try to do their best, but I don't know if the resources are there to do it right now. And that's why I say that I think, you know, one of our jobs is to really work on the whole issue of dialogue. How do we get people talking to one another again about the important things in our lives? If we're going to talk about, for example, a lifestyle that's more austere or more sober, I mean, we could do so many wonderful things with our lives. We don't need to be buying the most up-to-date computer, but all of that, too, is part of the system that we buy into. You know, all you do, you open a newspaper, turn on the TV, or go to your computer, and there's all sorts of advertising about the most up-to-date things.
Children are very vulnerable to this kind of message.
Of course they are, and the people who do the publicity know that very much. Why do you put candy at the cashier's area in the supermarket?
What do you hope will come out of this summit?
Well, I think maybe my own hopes have a lot more to do with our particular work than with the summit. I mean, I would love to see something really worthwhile, concrete, come out of this meeting. But looking to see what's going in, you know, they say garbage in, garbage out. You know, and I just get the impression that the kind of discussion that's gone on up until now is going to make it very difficult for good results to come out of these meetings, you know, in terms of governments coming to agreements with one another. Because developing countries, they're not going to sign on to a plan that basically is going to maintain the status quo. They want something to change. They want the governments that, or the countries that have created the problems, to take responsibility for them. And I just don't know if that's going to happen, because we've had a lot of time up until now to begin to address these issues, and it has not happened. If anything, there's been obfuscation. You know, when you look at the meetings that have led up to, like in Copenhagen and Durban, et cetera, the real important issues are not discussed. The important solutions that we need to begin to look at, I don't think, are being talked about. So for me, I'll pray for good outcomes at that level. I'll pray for the UN as well, because I think the UN is little by little really losing its good influence, in the sense of being a place where governments can come together and actually hammer out good, concrete, just decisions about how to do things in the world. It just seems to me we're becoming more and more, you know, it's the survival of the fittest. You know, whoever's the strongest, whoever screams the loudest. So I don't know where that's going to go. But my hope mostly resides with the groups that, like our own, I hope, will make decisions about what we need to do, and then to look for ways to make that happen. There's a guy up in Albany, New York. He has been, up until now, a professor at Siena College, although he'll be leaving the college right now. But he's also a secular Franciscan. He and his wife, they're part of a fraternity, a secular fraternity, that's composed of a number of college students. And really, they've organized themselves around the whole issue of ecology and how we need to address what's going on in our world. And I think that's going to be the way that we need to look at these issues, from the bottom up rather than from the top down. I know that he talked to me a lot about, like in the U.S., the pipeline that they want to build from Canada down to Texas. He's talking about, even if the president signs that in, there's been a lot of work at the grassroots level for communities between Canada and Texas, that they will not allow the pipeline to come through their area. You know, so it seems to me we can find ways to address the issues.
So the man on the street can feel as though his voice is even minimally listened to. It's there. We're there too.
Yeah, I hope so. but I think that we need to find ways to make that happen. You know, there's some wonderful programs about empowering people, empowering communities, empowering groups, and I think that's what we need to look at. You know, based on what we believe. You know, you said earlier, you asked about the invitation that we're receiving from maybe the governments or whoever, from the UN, to offer our part in this. You know, and I think what we can offer is a spirituality, a mysticism. You know, a way to approach this that gives us reason to work together to make the world a better place for everybody and not just for some. So that would be my hope, that at least, you know, at the level of our Franciscan family, we'll be able to decide together about how to address these issues and what, you know, and concrete steps that we can take to make them happen. My idea is, I'm going to say to people, we do not want a document at the end of this. What we want maybe is a list of proposals that we're going to work at, and we'll see where it goes.
That was Franciscan Father Joe Rozanski, Director of the Office of Justice and Peace and the Integrity of Creation at the Franciscan Headquarters in Rome.